Welcome to another episode of The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. I am your producer, Knives Monroe. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to The Scalpel on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge and on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast. Thank you very much for listening and enjoy the show.
Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. That's a famous quote. It's most commonly attributed to writer-philosopher George Santayana. He was a professor in philosophy at Harvard, which I think he eventually left that post. But the quote lives on. If we don't remember the past, we're condemned to repeat it. I'm a physician and I'm a surgeon, and I learned throughout my training and residency about the past, about past medical techniques, past surgical techniques, about the history of medicine. It was very important in my training. You see, to be a physician, we would have to understand how we got to where we are now. It's one of the reason I became a physician is because I thought I will never stop learning. My dad asked me, why do you want to be a doctor? I said, because I know it's going to challenge me the rest of my life. And then when I was a medical student, I thought I was going to do ENT, ear, nose, and throat, until I met a gentleman by the name of Joseph Malakar. He was a doctor doing a fellowship at the Shrine Burn Hospital, and he's a plastic surgeon, and he told me, nah, you want to do plastic surgery. And I said, why? He goes, because you're constantly going to be learning. I mean, plastic surgery fixes everybody else. And so I was always fascinated with the idea of continuing to learn and expand my training. You see, in any discipline, profession, or trade, history and experience are the guides. They're our teachers. And when you study those, it allows for real advancement and real progress. I mean, during my training, we would have something at, when I was at Parkland Hospital, called M&M Conference, Morbidity and Mortality Conference. And you would have someone would come up and present a case. And then the faculty would ask questions on the case. And they would also ask questions on, well, what technique did you use? When was that first described? Why did they do it that way? And what have we learned from it? And what's the name of that sign? Who is that sign attributed to? To understand how to treat something, you needed to understand the genesis of how the condition happened, who first treated it, and the advancements in treatment. I mean, in medicines, we have best practices or standard of care. And this all centers around the patient. Not as what's best for the physician, but what's best for the patient. In politics, best practice translates to anything and everything that will get them elected so they can keep and maintain power. As a physician, I took the Hippocratic Oath, and I'm not going to read you the whole thing, but it was really based off the Latin phrase, primum non nocere, which translated as first do no harm. And a translation of the Hippocratic Oath, and I'll just read parts of it, says, I will use treatment to help the sick accordingly to my ability, according to my ability and judgment, but never with a view to injury and wrongdoing. Neither will I administer a poison to anybody when asked to do so, nor will I suggest such a course. Similarly, I will not give to a woman a pessary to cause abortion, but I will keep pure and holy both my life and my art. The Hippocratic Oath goes on to say, into whatsoever houses I enter, I will enter to help the sick, and I will abstain from all intentional wrongdoing and harm, especially from abusing the bodies of man or woman, bond or free. And whatever I see or hear in the course of my profession, as well as outside my profession, in my intercourse with men, it will be what should not be published abroad. I will never divulge, holding such things to be holy secrets. Now if I carry out this oath, and I break it not, may I gain forever reputation among all men for my life and for my art. But if I break it and forswear myself, may the opposite befall me. That's the Hippocratic Oath. That's what physicians take. It's important. Hippocrates, we call pretty much the father of medicine. And while the oath was an ancient oath sworn to actually Greek gods, the actual wording rings true today. So physicians take it because we don't want to do harm. I look at that and I think about, as a physician, the responsibilities I have and what I learned from history and experience. And then I look at today's modern politicians. And the dichotomy is just glaring. In medicine, we use eponyms, which is a longstanding tradition in Western science and medicine, where we award an eponym as kind of an honor, like eponymity, like when there's a disease or a sign or a symptom, we will often attribute it to the physician or surgeon that found it. Rosing's sign is named after the Danish surgeon Niels Rosing, who lived back in the 1800s, and it's a sign of appendicitis. So if you push on the left side of the lower abdomen and has pain on the right side, we call that Rosing's sign, and that's an eponym. And it's considered, regarded as an honor. Eponymity is the standard, not anonymity. The scientific and medical communities regard it as bad form to attempt to epiminimize oneself, meaning you don't do something and then call it after yourself. Someone else does that down the line based on history and experience. Something that has been proven over time to be correct, then it becomes an eponym. Now, Obamacare, that's President Obama just eponizing himself. Problem is, they said Obamacare was going to be great, and the opposite turned out to be true. A lot of the times when Democrats, liberal progressives, and politicians in general say something's going to be good, the American electorate needs to really look at it and go, is it? Do I believe what they're saying? I mean, we revere the great minds in medicine and science. We have Franklin, Edison, Ford, the Wright brothers. We look back on our history. You can go to the Smithsonian Museum. I was recently in D.C. with my kids, and you can read about this and see Franklin's inventions, Edison's patents, Ford, the Wright brothers. You have electricity, the automobile, the airplane. See, people look back at the great innovators of our time, and we have great respect for them. We have great respect for former athletes, people that really did amazing things. All of these men and women have had great accomplishments and given us a foundation to build on something, whether it's in medicine, science, sports, whatever. And it improves the lives of every citizen here and around the world in this country. These great advances came from free men unencumbered by an onerous government full of regulations, confiscatory taxes, or they didn't come by it by being charismatic demigods. Why do you think that in medicine, science, sports, really every other vocation and profession in the world, history is so prominently studied and built upon? From lessons learned to project hot washes, success and failure studied, adjustments made, and true progressiveness, not like a liberal, in their respective fields are achieved when people look at the past, examine it, and learn. The only profession in the United States that refuses to study or learn from history and experience, either intentionally or through lack of intellectual horsepower, or what I like to call moral bankruptcy, for the most part, are modern politicians and bureaucrats. They don't understand that this is the only republic at the time when our founders founded this great nation back in 1776. They don't understand like republics like Rome and Athens had slavery, but that our founders came out and had rights for all human beings. It started with our Declaration of Independence. And as a doctor and as a scientist and as someone that studies history and experience, I understand how to make what I do better by studying the past and learning from it. So it boggles my mind that our current politicians don't seem to want to learn from the past. In fact, they want to rewrite the past to create a future that in every society since mankind hasn't worked. And that's socialism. I would direct our modern day politicians and any liberals that are listening to this podcast, you probably have already turned it off by now, but if you're listening, to the Declaration of Independence, where it was written when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind require that they should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what this country was founded on. That's our true history. It didn't say whites, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It didn't say black, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It said all men are entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You see, our founders, while not perfect people, the majority of them were not slave owners. The majority of them had a conscience, a moral fiber, from my reading, that came from their faith in God. It's that moral fiber, that faith in God, that propelled this nation forward to amazing advancements. And we've had some hiccups along the way, but we have always adjusted and course corrected. And the way we did that is we looked back on our history. In 1863, Abraham Lincoln, in his Gettysburg Address, said 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. It took almost 100 years, but we fought a civil war for equality. We didn't do that because Abraham Lincoln just had an idea one day and thought it would be cool. We didn't do that because he was looking at a news cycle that told him what to say. He didn't do that because he had fake scientific evidence that told him all men should be equal. No, he did that based on the history of this country. He looked back. He read the Declaration of Independence. He knew the founding, and he knew that this country, his words, was conceived in liberty. That means birthed in freedom. We are the only country that has ever been birthed in freedom. And if you remember nothing else, you need to remember that. You need to go back and look at the founding. And it continued. I mean, we can look at more, a mere 23 years later. A New York senator, U.S. senator by the name of Chauncey Depew, gave an amazing speech at the dedication of the Statue of Liberty when France gave us the statue. And it's a long speech, so I'm not going to read it all to you. But there's some really salient points in it. I'm going to loosely give you the 100,000-foot view. Chauncey talked about George Washington. He talked about General Lafayette and what we did and how we became a free nation. He talked about what was going on in the world. And he came to the, towards the end, he says, he talked, but for the unencumbered centuries to come, as liberty levels up the people to higher standards and a broader life, this statue will grow in the admiration and affections of mankind. When Franklin, again, he's looking back on history, drew the lightning from the clouds, he little dreamed that in the evolution of the science of his discovery would illuminate the torch of liberty for France and America. The rays from this beacon lighting this gateway to the continent will welcome the poor and the persecuted with the hope and promise of homes and citizenship. It will teach them that there is room and brotherhood for all who support our institutions and aid in our development, but that those who come to disturb our peace and dethrone our laws are aliens and enemies forever. That's our history. The Statue of Liberty was a promise of hope and freedom. It wasn't a free ticket for free stuff, free health care, paid college, guaranteed minimum wage, guaranteed money, period. No, it was the opportunity to be free, to pursue life as a free person. Now we've shifted from recognizing history and experience where all men were created equal to you have a right to an equal portion of what all men create. Just vote for me and you won't have to work for it to obtain it. While this sounds enticing on the surface, it's truly a receipt for disaster and the destruction of our republic. Dietrich Bonhoeffer famously quoted, "The ultimate test of a moral society is the kind of world that it leaves to its children. Action springs not from thought, but from a readiness for responsibility." What kind of world are we leaving for our children? Our founding fathers fought it out, and they left a better world for their children. President Lincoln understood that this country was founded on freedom, and although we had a gruesome civil war, they fought for the right of free people. The Statue of Liberty, when placed in the harbor, was a beacon, a light for people to come and obtain citizenship through a legal process. You see, our history is full of examples of freedom that was hard fought and won by men of great faith, integrity, and character. But over the past 10, 15, 20 years in my life, what I see are a bunch of clowns trying to give it away. I mean, I don't know what to call them. I have to call them clowns. I mean, clowns put on makeup. They change their looks to try to please whoever they're playing for, they're entertaining. I mean, when I looked at the 2020 Democrat presidential candidates during the debate, that's all that could come to mind for me. You have people trying to shapeshift, trying to change who they are, what they are, to play to the clapping seals. But if you listen to their words, I think our founders would be rolling in their graves. I think Dietrich Bonhoeffer would look at us and say, are you truly a moral society if you elect these guys? Because it doesn't sound like you really want to leave much to your children.
President Obama in his first year wanted to address both health care and climate. And he could only get one signature issue accomplished. It was obviously health care. He didn't get to do climate change. You may only get one shot, and your first issue that you're going to push, you get one shot, that it may be the only thing you get past. What is that first issue for your presidency? Eric Swalwell, you're first.
What's that first issue? President Obama only had one shot. He did Obamacare. He named it after himself. He told people that your health care would be less expensive. Remember, you're going to pay $2,000 less per person. If you like your doctor, you can keep it. Is this moderator even aware of recent history? I'm sure he is. He just doesn't care. President Obama could only get one thing done to destroy this country's way. You should say President Obama got Obamacare done. And of course, it didn't turn out the way President Obama thought. It's actually made the healthcare system worse. What will you try to do to make life better? But he doesn't say that, or not make life better, but what legislation do you propose? No, these guys are just going to throw out sound bites and utopian fantasies continue.
Parkland for Orlando for every community affected by gun violence, ending gun violence.
Oh, wow. Hold on. That's brilliant. Ending gun violence. You know, I could set a gun in front of me all day and the gun would not be violent. How about just ending people or criminal? How about helping protect against people that have guns that are criminals? You know, like we live in Texas. We don't have a lot of gun violence in Texas because you can conceal carry in Texas. We don't have strict gun laws. And most of the gun violence that you're seeing, which are really just criminality, are in areas with the strictest gun laws in the country. See Chicago. But they're not interested in actual history, experience, and fixing something. They just want to put on their makeup and their red noses and play to the clapping seals. Continue.
Climate change and the lack of economic mobility Bernie talks about.
Senator Gillibrand.
Oh, that's awesome. Climate change and the lack of economic mobility that he says. Oh, man. I hope he doesn't trip over that big clown shoe when he's getting off the stage. Keep going.
That includes a national paid leave plan, universal pre-K, affordable daycare, and making sure that women and families can thrive in the workplace no matter who they are.
Passing a middle class.
Senator Harris likes giving away money. She likes the fact that we're just going to make everything free. Keep going.
Guns.
I'm giving you credit. She just said, I like that. And then guns. I mean, let's just use the critical talking points to get the seals clapping. Continue.
Senator Sanders, first thing.
The premise that there's only one or two issues out there.
I'm not saying there is one or two.
Enormous crises.
Senator Sanders.
A political revolution. People have got to stand up and take on the special interest. We can transform this country.
There you go. There's another platitude from a raging lunatic Marxist. And I mean, that's a description of him. That's not a slant. He would probably wear that with a badge of honor. We've got to change. I mean, come on, Bernie? Seriously? I mean, Bernie Sanders, for the majority of my life, was considered a joke in the United States Senate. It's only in the past decade that he has become relevant, if that, because somehow people aren't paying attention to history and experience. It's not being taught in our schools, so people are thinking, wow, let's just get a bunch of free stuff. Free stuff. That's all they're talking about. He says nothing. All you hear air blowing across his teeth. But you don't hear anything of substance. Continue.
Mr. Vice President.
I think you're so underestimating what Barack Obama did. He's the first man to bring together the entire world, 196 nations, to commit to deal with climate change immediately.
Wait, Wait, okay, I'm not going to underestimate what Barack Obama did. Nah, I won't do that. I won't underestimate the fact that we had the Arab Spring, which was a disaster, in Egypt, in Libya. I'm not going to underestimate that. I'm not going to underestimate the fact that he destroyed healthcare for millions of Americans and then made it where they had coverage, they just couldn't afford it in their deductible. I'm not going to talk about that. You know, you can talk about Barack and climate change. Boy, that changed. What did it change? I mean, at a recent climate change event, Google had, there were 118 private jets that were flown out there. The only thing that changed in the climate was more CO2. The only thing that changes in the climate, and we'll go over this more later, is the pseudoscience that they're trying to push up. But so Joe Biden wants to hold on to Barack Obama's coattails. The only problem is that emperor has no clothes. So those are pseudo coattails, or those are invisible coattails. So you're grabbing at air. But Joe doesn't realize that because he's had enough Botox to paralyze half the universe. He's got a nice tan. His teeth are white. His hair is whiter. And he's smiling for the SEALs. Continue.
I mean, I don't buy that. But the first thing I would do is make sure that we defeat Donald Trump, okay. Period.
Mayor Buttigieg, your first priority, your first issue as president that you are going to block and tackle.
We've got to fix our democracy before it's too late. Get that right. Climate, immigration, taxes, and every other issue gets better.
Mr. Yang.
I would pass a $1,000 freedom dividend for every American adult starting at age 18, which would speed us up on climate change, because if you get the boot off of people's throats, they'll focus on climate change.
Is any of this coherent to anybody? If you get the boot off people's throat, they'll focus on climate change. If I give everyone $1,000, then they'll care about climate change. These guys are either historically illiterate, morally bankrupt, or a unique combination of both. Continue.
I would do a collaborative approach to climate change, and I would pronounce it well before the election to make sure we don't reelect the worst president in American history.
And Ms. Williamson with the last word.
My first call is to Prime Minister of New Zealand.
You can't reelect the worst president in American history because he's already served two terms. That's President Obama. And let's listen to Moonbeam.
The place where it's the best place in the world for a child to grow up. And I will tell her, girlfriend, you are so on, because the United States of America is going to be the best place in the world for a child to grow up.
Ms. Williams, you guys were close with the short, at least it was shorter responses.
Not at all.
That's pretty much the front runners for the Democrat primary. Climate change, guns. I don't know what Marianne Williamson's doing. I don't know if she's high when she's there, she's taking mushrooms or smoking dope, or she's just, that's her personality. I don't know. I'm not going to diagnose her like they try to diagnose President Trump based on just seeing news clips, but she looks like she's a little bit out there. So that's what you have. In a normal cognitive universe, those guys couldn't get elected dog catcher. But we're not in a normal universe. They're not well prepared. They're not putting out any type of platform of what they would actually do that could be done. Medicare for all is healthcare for none. Guaranteed minimum wage just causes massive job loss. All you have to do is pay attention to what happens when that's implemented. Guaranteed free college means someone has to pay for it. And we don't have the money to pay our debt now. The laws of economics, like the laws of physics, are immutable, and they will catch up to you. So how can any of these guys actually get up there in their clown suits and get praised by the clapping SEALs? Well, one way they do that is because they have a mainstream media that gets everything ready for them. They want to tell you that our president is bad. They want to tell you that he's racist. They don't want the truth. They just want to throw out racist, racist, racist all the time. And so they not only do it there, but they also do it in the debate. So this wasn't a debate on ideas, the Democrat primary debates. This is not a debate on ideas. This is a debate on who can say racist the number of times and use key words that their polling people tell them, and their lobbyists, their talking heads in the media tell them to use racist. They use racist. Their consultants tell them they got to say racist, you know, polarize. You know, they're all good Alinskyites. They pick the person and then they polarize it.
I want to turn now to the issue of race in America. We have got to take on Trump's racism.
We'll call his racism out for what it is.
The racial divide lives within me.
Environmental racism, economic racism, criminal justice racism.
Listen to all these people. This is a montage I got out of PJ Media. And you can hear Senator Warren. You can hear the moderators. You can hear everyone, and they're jumping on the racism bandwagon. Listen to what they say. Does this sound presidential? Does this sound like they're serious people? Continue.
Racism.
And racism, or crime, or poverty, ended on my watch. But in our city,
that what Trump is doing through his racism,
systemic racism has touched every part of American life.
And segregation and the institutional racism we see now.
President Trump is pursuing a re-election strategy based in part on racial division.
President Trump's pursuing a strategy based on racial division. Well, instead of just saying it, why don't we just see what President Trump has to say?
Today I have a simple proposal for Democrat leaders to support legislation to end illegal migration, and we will use the vast savings to rebuild our inner cities. That's the way we should be doing it.
Okay, that was from Trump's rally last night. He wants to use the money you're going to save from illegal immigration, which will be billions, to rebuild the inner cities. Now, is that racist? Because my understanding is the inner cities are mostly populated by people of color. Is that a racist thing? No, that's actually an idea. That is a platform. He is going to the American people, and he is not calling them names right now. He is saying, look, let's stop illegal immigration, because ever since the founding, people that come here illegally, we're not supposed to. It's against the law. We're not going to support that because it will destroy a nation. We've seen this over and over again in history. So let's stop the illegal migration that, by the way, every single person on that stage in the Democrat debate supported 5 to 10 years ago. Let's go back to their previous position before they started losing a large majority of the African-American vote and keep our borders closed and safe and have legal immigration. And then we'll use that money to help American citizens of color rebuild the inner cities. But they don't want anything like that. They're not looking for opportunities. They're looking for optics.
Law, Sheila Jackson Lee's reparations bill, so that we can have the national conversation we have waited too long in this country to have.
If you did the math of the 40 acres and a mule, given that there was 4 to 5 million slaves at the end of the Civil War, there were 4 to 5, and they were all promised 40 acres and a mule for every family of four. If you did the math today, it would be trillions of dollars.
A white wealth gap in America.
Racial issues.
They're all talking about giving stuff to the inner city. Trump just said it. See, they're not serious. They're not going to do it. They're going to make this country great again. They're just going to keep talking. They're just going to keep spouting off. They're just going to keep telling you what Trump doesn't do and what they will do for you. The problem is Trump has actually done it. They haven't. But let's listen to President Trump after he got elected. Let's listen to him when he had his first State of the Union speech in 2018. And contrast that against the talking heads you just heard.
So let's begin tonight by recognizing that the state of our union is strong. Since the election, we have created 2.4 million new jobs. Small business confidence is at an all-time high. The stock market has smashed one record after another. In April, this will be the last time you will ever file under the old and very broken system, and millions of Americans will have more take-home pay starting next month.
That's what Trump's saying. Millions of Americans will have more take-home pay. Millions of Americans will be lifted up. America is great, but what are you hearing from the Democrats?
$50 billion into historically black colleges and universities. Close the black-white wealth gap in America.
Systemic racism has touched every part of American life. If you walk into an emergency room and you are black, your reports of pain will be taken less seriously. If you apply for a job and you are black, you are less likely to be called just because of the name on the resume.
You have people lying. None of that is true. I'm a physician. I work in emergency rooms. When I was training, less likely to be called because you're black. Are you kidding me? They're trying to sow fear into the American public. They want you to be afraid. Vote for them so they can control you, so they can tell you what to feel. and then let's listen to President Trump again.
Core of the disastrous Obamacare, the individual mandate is now gone. Houston's reverence for those who have served our nation reminds us of why we salute our flag, why we put our hands on our hearts for the Pledge of Allegiance, and why we proudly stand for the national anthem. The era of economic surrender is totally over. From now on, we expect trading relationships to be fair and, very importantly, reciprocal. Tonight, I'm calling on Congress to produce a bill that generates at least $1.5 trillion for the new infrastructure investment that our country so desperately needs. Tonight, I am calling on Congress to finally close the deadly loopholes that have allowed MS-13 and other criminal gangs to break into our country. We have proposed new legislation that will fix our immigration laws and support our ICE and Border Patrol agents. I am extending an open hand to work with members of both parties, Democrats and Republicans.
Okay, that's our president being presidential. And here are the clowns being clownish.
Terrorism cases this year have been motivated by white supremacy. In fact, the alleged shooter in this weekend's attack in Gilroy, California, referenced a well-known white supremacist book on social media. How are you going to combat the rise of white supremacy?
We need to call out white supremacy for what it is, domestic terrorism.
It's why I've proposed that we do everything from investing in historically redlined neighborhoods,
Mayor,
to build black wealth in home ownership.
Thank you, Mayor.
To supporting entrepreneurship for black
Thank
Americans.
You very much.
We need to recognize that when it comes to the economic gap between blacks and whites in America, it does come from a great injustice that has never been dealt with.
See, right? Racism is rampant in the Democrat Party. They are the party of racism. They are the party of Jim Crow. They're the party of Korematsu, the decision that had the that allowed us to have Japanese internment camps. That's their party. That's their history, but they don't want to see that. They just want to call our president a racist and tell us how it's white supremacy and we're dividing the country. The problem is no one sees that. What they see is a president that's out there working for us.
Of every background, color, religion, and creed. And the sacred duty of every elected official in this chamber is to defend Americans, to protect their safety, their families, their communities, and their right to the American dream. Because Americans are dreamers too. We know that weakness is the surest path to conflict, and unmatched power is the surest means to our true and great defense.
President Trump understands strength, that peace through strength works. That's why the Soviet Union collapsed, because Reagan, they knew he built our arms up so much that they couldn't compete and they fell from within, and we didn't lose millions of Americans over it. He understands that because he sees history and experience. He knows that you can't show weakness to despotic governments, despotic leaders in other governments and other nations, or they will attack you and Americans will die. See, he's for the American dream. He's for the people that are dreaming in America, just not the people that are dreaming how to sneak into it. He understands strength. He understands peace through strength. But you know who doesn't? One of the clowns on the stage, Elizabeth Warren.
Senator Warren, you want to make it U.S. policy that the U.S. will never use a nuclear weapon unless another country uses one first. Now, President Obama reportedly considered that policy, but ultimately decided against it. Why should the U.S. tie its own hands with that policy?
Because it makes the world safer. The United States is not going to use nuclear weapons preemptively, and we need to say so to the entire world. It reduces the likelihood that someone miscalculates, someone misunderstands. Our first responsibility is to keep ourselves safe. And what's happening right now with Donald Trump, as they keep expanding the different ways that we have nuclear weapons, the different ways that they could be used.
Old sitting bullcrap, Elizabeth Warren. She addresses nukes, and she says, we're not going to use them first. If someone else uses them, then we'll use them. Hey, Liz, if someone else uses them, millions of people are going to die, and it'll destroy parts of America for generations. But I think that might be your goal. You see, the previous Democrat administration seemed bound and determined that Iran would go nuclear. I mean, that's what President Obama allowed to happen. It's just President Trump came in and said, you know, that treaty doesn't work. We don't need our neighbors going nuclear. We don't need our enemies going nuclear. We need ourselves to stay nuclear so they won't. So President Warren's administration would keep America safe by announcing to everybody that we won't shoot first. Hey, how does that sound? How's that work for you? I guess presumably she wouldn't use them to retaliate either because they'll all be taken out in the first strike. If someone uses nukes and gets the first strike, we can't retaliate. She said it would make the world safer. President Trump is trying to make the United States of America safer.
For this reason, I am asking Congress to end the dangerous defense sequester and fully fund our great military. We must modernize and rebuild our nuclear arsenal, hopefully never having to use it, but making it so strong and so powerful that it will deter any acts of aggression. Just signed, prior to walking in, an order directing Secretary Mattis to re-examine our military detention policy and to keep open the detention facilities in Guantanamo Bay. We need only look at the depraved character of the North Korean regime to understand the nature of the nuclear threat.
President Trump understands that there's evil in this world. He understands that America is great, but to keep America safe, we have to have a strong military, because you see, if you look at the founding, that's one of the tenets that our government should be responsible for, is to keep this country safe, not to give everyone a job, not to give everyone money, not to give everyone health care. If you live in a society that is safe, if you live in a society that is free, you can succeed beyond your wildest dreams. It's just going to be hard for a few small group of people to keep and maintain power if everyone else is so happy living in a free nation. President Trump understands this. When he talks, he speaks for the American people. When the Democrats talk, and the people that want to lead the Democrat Party and want to be president, they speak to you.
African Americans are in favor of cash payments to Black Americans who are descendants of slaves. How do you respond to them?
Well, I was the wealth that we have built, the way we became the greatest country on the face of the planet, was literally on the backs of those who were kidnapped and brought here by force. The legacy of slavery and segregation and Jim Crow and suppression is alive and well in every aspect of the economy and in the country today.
Again, those are talking points. That's what they want you to know. Jim Crow. They want you to know that slavery, this country was built on the back of slaves. No, it really wasn't. There was slavery here and it was horrible. That's why we fought a civil war. They don't pay attention to actual history and experience. They don't even pay attention to current history. Like in December of 2018, when Robert Johnson, the founder of Black Entertainment Television and America's first Black billionaire, praised President Donald Trump for the roaring economy and criticized Democrats for moving too far left. The party, in my opinion, he said, for me personally, has moved too far to the left. Johnson told CNBC's Hattie Gamble, and I bet her head about exploded. And for that reason, I don't have a particular candidate I'm supporting in the party right now. I think at the end of the day, if a Democrat is going to beat Trump, then that person, he or she, will have to move to the center. Yeah, we'll have to come love the country, but I don't think they can beat Trump. Because this guy goes on to say, I think the economy is doing great and it's reaching populations that heretofore had very bad problems in terms of jobs and employment and the opportunities that come from employment. So African-American unemployment is at its lowest level, Johnson said. That's an African-American man. For you Democrats, that's a man of color who became a billionaire in the greatest country in the world. You see, President Trump talks about our country's greatness. He talks about the founding. He talks about making America great again. But you see, the Democrats don't want to do that. The Democrats don't want you to understand that this is a country built on independence and freedom. They want you to understand this is a country built on dependence and asking permission from them and being told what to do. But as the conservative constitutional conscience of America, which I believe is the true silent majority, and you know what? It's intersectional. There's people in America, Black, white, Indian, Asian, whatever, The true silent majority waits and observes the forces of this unfettered progressivism and global elitist agenda, and they're just being blown up like this massive float, like in the Macy Day parades, and they're pushing it on us right now. They're trying to float this over our heads, and the clowns are carrying this float, holding on to it with long lines. And they're just saying, we are here. This is us. Listen to us roar. But the float is full of hot air, and so are they. Gone are the subtle head fakes to liberal ideology with the false pretense of doing the will of the people. Now, our political class, media, and intellectual elites have tossed off any veil of pretense and are moving full speed to overload and defeat the will of the people for their own good as perceived by the masterminds. They want to push tolerance with intolerance. They are committing political malpractice. No, they're committing American malpractice. This is not the first time we've seen this in history. History is repeat with multiple reruns of socialism, utopian fantasies, where a few elite masterminds decide what is good and right for the masses. Each run of the series always ends in death, destruction, and the dissolving of the civil society. Over 240 years ago, 56 men decided to flip the script in the history of the world. They realized that their rights didn't come from man, but were inalienable, that is God-given. As such, they could never be infringed or removed. Today, after years of carefully placed insurgents in our education system, the media, and an ever-growing federal leviathan bureaucracy, the same problem, the same tragic film is trying to make a comeback in our nation. The American people still reject the progressive agenda outright, but the national megaphone of the fake news media and power-hungry, honorless petitions that are pushing this country over the edge is testing the fabric of the American people. Will America restore the rule of law, protect its borders like our president talks about, honor the Constitution, and shrink and rein in an out-of-control federal bureaucracy? Or will the withering barrage of 24/7 fake news and propaganda supporting these spineless politicians, while they are controlled by all the special interests, seize the day? I pray it isn't too late. I think there's a way forward, but it's only going to be paved with the recognition of history and experience. This American malpractice being performed right now by the progressive elites, the Democrat Party, and the news media to be identified and brought to the light. This will include accountability and the reinstatement of honor in our leadership. It's not going to be easy. It never has been. Appreciate you spending some time with us this morning. For Knives and myself, pay attention to history and experience. Call out the politicians that are truly performing malpractice, and keep freedom rolling.